Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for October 16th, 2016. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sami, and we're here this week to review the Shanghai Rolex Masters. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Check them out for the upcoming ATP World Tour Finals in London, as well as the Australian Open in Melbourne, Australia in January. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce our podcast, our co-host, Parsa. How are you today, buddy?
I'm doing well. I'm mystified by the fall tennis season. But you know what? Out of left field, I'm going to give you something really important.
Yes.
Sock and Isner win Shanghai doubles.
Yes. That was actually very impressive for them. You know, it's just starting on that briefly, it's amazing to me how the modern game of doubles can, if they want, be dominated by singles players. Let's be honest, right? But the funny part is that in singles, these guys really can't volley. They're not really made to do it that much in the doubles. Sock and Isner can both bang serves at over 135, no problem. So, I mean, then you're getting duck volleys at the net, you can put it away. But you watch them in singles, and they can't really get there that effectively. I mean, we saw a guy like Misha Zverev challenge Djokovic getting to the quarters, which was an excellent result for the qualifier. You know, nice serve volley game. I think if he had a little bit of a bigger serve, he could really do some damage. But he just doesn't look like he has a live arm like his brother, like his younger brother, Alex. So, excuse me. So, that was that. But first things first, Parsa, we had the Shanghai Masters wrap up today. Andy Murray winning his sixth title of the year, his third title in Shanghai. Just rolling right now, coming off of his win last week in Beijing. 2-for-2 on the Asian swing. He's going to go chill for a week and then get ready for Vienna as he continues to make his march towards potentially becoming the number one ranked player in the world. So let's start with Murray. Takes out Roberto Bautista Agut today. Spaniard making his first appearance in a Masters 1000 final. Took out Djokovic in the semis 4-4. Took out Sanga behind that. So a great week for the very professional Spaniard. And I use that word professional because then we're going to link it to another player that wasn't as professional this week later on in the show. So what did you think of Murray's overall performance throughout the week? I don't believe he lost a set throughout both Beijing and Shanghai. I mean, this guy's just defense is just off the charts. He looks fresh, too. He doesn't look like he's that tired, which is, to me, very impressive. What are your thoughts on that, Parsa?
Well, it helps to play straight sets, Nima, right?
Yes, exactly.
You can run longer doing that. I actually had a question for you. I listened to his, I've watched him play, but
yes.
Maybe I haven't watched him enough, but he's giving credit to, obviously, to when Lendl came back in the picture, he's saying, I've made a few improvements in my game. What have they been, Nima?
Great question. The noticeable one, and we were both there for that match against Dimitrov at the U.S. Open, which was terrible. But he was serving in the 140s. So he's definitely hitting his serve, first serve, way heavier. Looks like his second serve has beefed up. I don't know. I mean, I think it's just a mental thing.
I'm curious. I would like for people to tell us if they see something.
I don't think it's so much of a technical thing. I mean, Murray's obviously a supremely gifted guy. But I think this year, he's coming into his own now that he's a father. You know, at the beginning of the year, he obviously had a lot going on at the beginning of the year. You know, post-Australian Open, throughout Indian Wells and Miami, he didn't play that well. And then he really started turning around, right? Clay court season, he was making all the finals of French, wins Wimbledon, wins Olympics. And now he's back here. You know, obviously he looked like he was tired at the U.S. Open. He flamed out there to Nishikori, I believe, right? And then he comes in here and, I mean, he's just cruising now. So to me, it looks like he's hitting a serve heavier. His defense is amazing. It's like good luck trying to hit a winner on this guy right now. And he's just supremely confident. And I think he's smelling blood. You know, the one thing that for him he hasn't really done is become number one like the other three guys in the top four have done numerous times up until this point. And, you know, he smells blood and he knows that Djokovic is not playing as well. And he's in the locker room. He probably knows way more than you and I do. So, I mean, that's it for me. And he knows now if I really go into overdrive and I do everything that I need to do, hey, you know what? Maybe now I can become number one in the world. And I mean, I think it's just a matter of time at this point. If it happens this year, early next year, looks like it's definitely going to happen. And I mean, look at these score lines, Parsa. I mean, beating Goffin 2-2. You know what I mean? He's rolling guys. Like, these are not very competitive matches that he's had to get through. He beats Lucas Pouille, who's playing really well. I mean, Pouille was just laughing at the end of the match. Beat him 1-3. It's just like he's just rolling through these matches. As I mentioned, he took out Goffin. In the semis, he beat Simon 4-3. And then he beat, you know, Batista Agut today 6-1. I mean, these are like he's cruising. That's the best way. And he looks like the number one player in the world, especially the last couple of weeks. So good on him. I think, you know, if he wins Vienna and he wins Paris, that's another 1,500 points to this year's total. He's 915 behind Djokovic now. I don't think Djokovic is playing before Paris. He said he's going to push on through, even though he's got some things that are bothering him, both personally and physically. So we'll see how it transpires. But, you know, I definitely think that Murray has a good chance of finishing number one this year, if not early next year. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And that's not including, you know, no points from the Olympics, Nima. I mean, he very well could be the number one player in the world at this very second. So,
yeah, and that was really a shame, to be honest with you. I completely get the no prize money, but I don't get why these guys don't get points. It doesn't make sense. It's a super high-level tournament. All the best players are there. Very grueling, you know what I mean? And it's not an inconvenience in terms of their mindset because it's a pleasure and a privilege to play in the games, but it was an inconvenience in the schedule, let's be honest. I mean, it screwed up everybody for the whole summer. Give these guys some points, man. Because I know the last Olympics had points. And it's like, I have no idea. I think their mindset behind it was they're trying to make it as pure as possible to the Olympic Games. And the other issue is that you can't defend the points next year. So next year, let's say they gave them 1,500 points because it's kind of in between a slam and a master series. And it's like the World Tour Finals, kind of. They can't defend that next year. So those points would come off and that could maybe screw them up. But needless to say, I still think they should have given it to them. That's my opinion.
Agree.
And that's nothing we can really control. And then, I mean, moving forward, let's go down the chain a little bit. Djokovic losing in the semis. I mean, smashing his racket after the first set that he lost to Batista Agut, and then ripping his shirt again. So he looks flustered. I mean, he doesn't look like he's himself at this point. And maybe he was, you know, he's got a lot going on the sidelines. And he was trying to deflect a lot of pressure by saying he's not really looking at the number one ranking anymore, as well as you know, winning slams. Which for me, the second one is very, very strange, because this guy's, you know, like as you were saying off air, this guy's like an assassin on the court, right? You have 12 majors, you're two away from Sampras and Nadal, you know what I mean? And then you're trying to get Federer, and you're still only 30, and Federer is definitely fading. Nadal is fading. Why not go for another 5 or 6, right? So to me, it's bizarre. There's no question. I wouldn't be surprised if Becker's not in the picture next year. You know what I mean? Stuff like that can definitely happen at this point. But, I mean, time will tell how it transpires. You know, is there anything technically and physically you're seeing from Djokovic? I mean, it's one of those things, age-old things, Parsa. Once you see a guy not playing well anymore, then you're like, oh, this is going on, that's going on. But if he was cruising, if he won this tournament, then we'd say everything is great. You know what I'm saying? So is there anything, however, that you saw that, you know, is holding him back at this stage?
I mean, what I see is the the absence of the great shots, you know?
Yeah.
You see the work he's put in, but the freedom, the creativity, the instinct, those are the things that you don't see the, wow, did he just do that? You see all the things he's worked on, and so that makes him still very, very good. It's just not making him high-end good right now, and I think it's making the difference. Tennis is just about a few points here and there, and I think he's used to win all of those points here and there, and now he's only winning, you know, 80% or 70% of those points that are here and there, and I think that's ultimately making the difference, not hitting the clutch shots in the right moments, and not being able to hold on to leads and continue his concentration to put guys away. I ultimately think that's what it's about, and it's just sort of a belief system. He's definitely has a crack in his armor, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to see. I mean, you know, Parsa, we've been doing this for a while, and you know, you go back and you know, I remember that year where Federer won the French Open, and then he won Wimbledon right after that. And earlier in that year, we're like, this guy's done. You know, he's not going to do. And then he goes and he wins two slams. I think he got back to number one. You know what I mean? And it's the same thing with Nadal in 2013. He looked like he was, you know, on his back, out of the game. Comes back, wins French Open, wins U.S. Open, cruises through the summer winning in Canada as well as Cincy, finishes number one. And then Djokovic picks it up, goes on a tear. And now Murray's going on a tear. You know what I mean? It's just, that's why we got to sit back, and because all these guys are great players. And, you know, if Murray, for the next year to year and a half, if he can really get his act together and keep this going, he could maybe win another 2-3 slams. It's not inconceivable. It's just a question of if he can go on, because obviously the next guys are coming up, like Alex Zverev. You know, he's got a really good future, in my opinion. Some of the other younger guys, I think Dominic Thiem, as I've mentioned before, is going to be dynamite on the clay in Paris for the next, I don't know, maybe 5 years, 3 to 5 years for sure. And then there's some other guys, if they can get their heads, you know, screwed on straight, like a Nick Kyrgios. We'll get into his debacle a little bit later in the show.
I have a question on that
sure.
theory.
Yes.
Do you think that this is his first blip? Or do you think after his dominant 13 season that he had that blip and then now he came back to dominance again? And then is this the second blip? You know, you mentioned Federer had his blip and Nadal had his blip, and then they came back all the way to number one in the world. And do you think this is Djokovic's first one or his second one? Like, well, what stage of his career do you think we're in?
I still think he's got a lot to give because he hasn't had anything that's that debilitating, in my opinion, that we know of. You know, there's stuff that we might not know of, right? But the thing, you know, Robbie Koning, who's, you know, a good friend of both of ours, he does a lot of the tennis TV commentating. He made a fantastic point during the semifinals against Batista Agut yesterday. He said that Djokovic is the number one type of player that he really has to work for it super hard. Everything has to be like clockwork, Parsa. From his practicing to his eating to his stretching to his sleep patterns to everything. You look at a guy like Federer, he didn't have to, and he still doesn't have to, even at 35, in my opinion, work that hard to be as great as he is. Even a guy like Nadal, who's a workhorse, he doesn't have a special diet. You know what I mean? He's still, you see him enjoying life. He goes fishing. He does all of this stuff. He's, you know what I mean? But when you look at Djokovic, he has to be so meticulous every single second of the day with in which what he does. And if that equilibrium is kind of, you know, pushed, you know, to either direction, who knows what's going to happen then, right? He's completely off keel. Obviously, if all of that is in sync and the synergy is perfect, yeah, then you got what you have. This guy's winning 2 or 3 slams a season. But it doesn't look like at this stage that's occurring. And that's why I think agreeing with our buddy Rob Koning is you're seeing what you're seeing. And I mean, I think that was a fantastic point. And I mean, that's what it's just so hard, you know, Parsa, to be perfect all the time and to have everything, you know, on top of it, to be on top of everything is very difficult and it's draining. At some point, we're human beings, right? We have emotions, we have feelings, we have, you know, all of these things that run through us, fatigue, all of these things that one day you're going to wake up and you're like, man, do I have to keep doing all of this just to be where I'm at? And you know what? Like, if that's a little bit questionable, then you're going down.
Same.
Yeah, and it really is. So, It's going to be interesting. I mean, the season still, they'll still definitely have some tennis to be played. We have tournaments going on this week in Moscow, Stockholm, and a new one in Antwerp. So still some guys vying for those positions. Interesting. Now, Parson, we're going to move into Rafa Nadal. You know, he lost his first match this week to Victor Troitsky. Troitsky played an amazing match. He flamed out in his next match, which was the Nadal curse, because whenever you see somebody upset Nadal, they're always going to lose their next match. Especially if it's a lower ranked guy relatively. But Parsa, we got to get to the bottom of this, man. What is wrong with Nadal's forehand? Bottom line, what is your opinion? After all of these years of coaching, watching Nadal, you know, writing on Nadal, photographing Nadal, all of the stuff that you've done, what is up with this guy's forehand? Because it's not good right now. It's garbage. Realistically, compared to what it needs to be, it's really a shadow of what it was.
I actually have a good theory for you, Niman.
Yes.
I think he's lost weight.
Okay.
And I think the weight he's lost has been muscle. And I just think there's just not as much weight in the ball. You know, he's just not, the ball isn't moving as much, and he's not getting the same RPM and racket speed through the shot, and he's cutting up the backside a little bit more, trying to compensate for that. And when he's doing that, he's losing that the heaviness of the ball. So it's still spinning, but it's like a powder puff instead of an iron fist coming at you. And
yes.
I think that's a big difference. And you know, I think some of it has to do with court position. I think the number of percentage of balls that he's hitting off his back foot are greater. Even though he's trying to go forward, maybe he's going forward and hitting the ball a little bit later, and that's giving him that puffier result. So I think there's this definitely a transition happening, and I think he's trying to drive that ball more, and I think that's making it less devastating. So it's like a lot of I think, you know, when I say weight issue, I'm talking about the weight of the ball, and if you can't get your body weight, which maybe has dropped a little bit to save his knees, and then you can't get the movement to get going forward, and then you can't hit the ball early enough to do that, because the speed of the ball coming at you is faster and you're not reacting as faster, those are all going to create, you know, let's say 3 inches less of height on the ball. And that makes the world of a difference. You know, it's the difference between someone who is 6'2 handling his ball or someone 5'11 can now handle his ball. And I think there's, you know, I'm obviously just theorizing, but I know that all my years in tennis, that there is something to it, and there's something in that area that's affecting it. And it's almost impossible to tell exactly. But this is what happens when people age. You know, it's kind of you asking me why 3-4 years ago, to try to describe why Federer's not moving as well. I mean, I don't know. It's, you know, maybe a doctor can tell you, or someone who studies muscular structure on why an older body, you know, isn't as explosive as a younger one. But I think that's the case here with Nadal as well.
Yeah, and so the next thing is, you know, you look at a guy like Jack Sock, and you look at the RPMs and the heaviness of his forehand, right? That kind of was what Nadal had, and it's not like that anymore. And you look at, you know, Parsa, I was looking at some video of Nadal in his teens, and, you know, he's playing like Guillermo Correa at the Argentine in Monte Carlo, and man, you should have seen his forehand then, man. It was just flying off of the court. You know what I mean? Like, super heavy. And he didn't even have as good of a serve. Like, he was just spinning in a serve, running around, and crushing his forehand. Like, not even a second, not even, you know, second guessing that for a microsecond. Just crushing the ball in the corner, no problem. And then, you know, he had that sleeveless error where, and you just see his, you know, his muscles flying all over the place. You're just destroying the ball. He doesn't have that anymore. Doesn't have that mojo. And I think you're right. His weight, he's lost some weight. I think the weight loss is attributed to the fact that he wants to move a little bit quicker because he's getting older. And so obviously the lighter you are, you're going to be a little bit quicker around the court. And we're talking about such, you know, minute things in this level of tennis that it all adds up. But as a result of that, the heaviness of his actual shot has come down. So it's kind of like, it's one of those things like how much is enough, right? It's going to be difficult for me, and he's also commented that he might not even play for the rest of the year. He might just bag the season, not because he's injured, just because he wants to practice and really get ready for 2017, because he still believes that he can win and play his best tennis and win the biggest tournaments. Carlos Moya's mentor, and you know, he was playing Challenger, sorry, on the Challenger tour. There was a tournament in Mexico. He's playing on that Champions Tour, whatever they have. And he was commenting that he still believes that Nadal can get back and win some slams. He's only 30. Even though, I mean, Moya was probably my favorite player of all time, I have some sort of, I don't necessarily agree with him on that. I don't know if Nadal can win slams, but we really can't count this guy out, man. The guy's such a warrior. And he's, I mean, just like Murray's taking advantage of maybe Djokovic sliding a little bit right now, you better believe that if Nadal can smell a little bit of opportunity, he's going to jump right all over that and take advantage. So, you know, that's why we watch and we see what happens. So, Parsa, let's move into the last, you know, character that we're going to talk about this week. That's Nick Kyrgios. I mean, I was full of praise for him before this tournament. Won Tokyo last week, just playing amazing. Comes in, beats Sam Querrey in his first match, and then just pulls, you know, something I don't think I've ever seen on a tennis court. I mean, just blatant, not trying, not caring, being rude, disrespectful. Anything that you can imagine, he basically did in that match against Misha Zverev. He lost 1-3, I believe, in whatever it was, 48 minutes, you know, hitting like country club serves with a, you know, a Western grip, hitting them 40 miles an hour for his opponent to hit back, just asking the umpire if he can call time so he can finish off the match and go home. All of, like, crazy stuff. So, Parsa, this is my question for you before we get into it, because I'm going to come at this from a different angle. Not condoning anything that Kyrgios did. You know that I like the guy, and I have, you know, I think that the guy has a lot of talent. I don't think anybody can question that. This is my question for you. You got a guy like Roberto Bautista Agut, right? Super professional guy. You know he does everything. I mean, the guy's very meticulous. Robotic in a sense. You're not going to hear anything from him. You know, he's just going to go out there, play his tennis, and play it well. Maximize what he has. You know, he doesn't have, I don't even think, half of the talent that Nick Kyrgios has. But I think he's maximizing himself. And, you know, granted, he's reaping those rewards. I mean, this guy's having a super successful career, in my opinion. Is it better to have guys consistently like Roberto Bautista Agut on the tour, who's not going to make any headlines, who is obviously going to be, you know, credited and respected by fans and his fellow players on tour, but it's not really going to draw in that pizzazz from the media and the surrounding, you know, bodies, you know what I mean? Like the casual fans, and even like as we're trying to draw more fans into the sport. Or is it better to have a guy like Nick Kyrgios, within reason, I mean, as long as he's not harming people physically out there, to have him continue to do what he's doing, but he's getting a lot of exposure for the sport. Is it the kind of exposure that we necessarily want? Perhaps not. But it is coming, and it's bringing that attention and that flair. And you know what? I can guarantee you, whatever tournament he decides to play next, believe me, it's going to be full for people to watch him play, right? Is that the type of guy that we want? And then I got a couple other points about the guy that I want to bring forward. But what's your opinion overall on that, you know, perspective of like a guy like Roberto Bautista Agut and the way he handles himself and his success, as well as a guy like Nick Kyrgios? And let's be completely honest, Parsa, he's a successful guy. He's won 3 tournaments this year. He's number 14 in the world, and he's only 21 years old. So what are your thoughts?
I mean, I'd much rather have Nick Kyrgios. I don't even think it's a question.
Yeah.
You know, it's for me, it's one of those things that you've got a guy who's unquestionably electric with his talents, and he's in the first chapter of his story. And this is the story of where he's a bad boy and
yeah,
whatever, and hopefully he doesn't harm himself enough that he can, you know, when he's 30 and he's winning slams and the world has changed their view of him and they love him now and adore him. Hopefully that's the story that he's writing. In terms of you know, Bautista Agut, you love those stories too. You need those kinds of guys in order to make a professional tour.
Yes.
Professional. At the same time, you know, I think the ATP is handling this very lightly. I don't think this is
exactly
the first case.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm also a heavy hand. I more than Kyrgios, I hate he's outwardly tanking, great. But what about Dimitrov at the U.S. Open? I still go back to that match. I paid a lot of money for those tickets. And I got good seats to go with my wife, and I'm still pissed off. Like, I don't like that guy ever. I will boo him every single time I see him.
Yeah.
Anywhere, I root against him every single time. Because he didn't put everything into it. So he was, quote unquote, faking his tanking. He looked the part, but he was, you and I both know, anyone who really understands tennis knows that the effort wasn't there through and through. And he almost admitted to that, I was just done, and I just couldn't muster up any more energy. Like, what the F? Arthur Ashe night session, you can't muster up energy. Like, what's happening here? As my baby boy would say, what's happening? It doesn't make any sense. But here's how I deal with both. I'd slap him with a $250,000-$300,000 fine instead of the $19,600 that he got.
Yeah.
And I think he'll think twice about taking that the whatever the pancake grip and serving 35 miles an hour to Zverev. I think that'll speak volumes. And I think you get a heavy hand and you do it that way. If he wants out of the sport, then see you later, man.
Yeah, and I don't think he does. But Andy Murray, obviously, he's boys with him, and he came into his defense, and he said we need to protect guys like Nick Kyrgios. And, Djokovic said that there's no question that this guy's one of the most talented guys that we've had in the game for a long time. And, a lot of great things have not been said about him. There was a quote, or a comment, should I say, that I found on a Eurosport site in the comment section. This guy, Barrow2, and I'll read that to our audience right now, Parsa. And he writes, he will work it out, referring to Kyrgios. He's lucky that he is good enough. He is there. In the real world, he would not get a job despite of his talents. And that's completely a great point, because you can't do anything else in the world other than professional sports and act like a jackass. They're going to throw you out in 2 seconds, right? And then the guy also goes on and says, I like him and hope he turns it around. I hope he's not another Tyson Fury, plays the clown, and then gets all down about how he is perceived. And that's another great point, because Kyrgios does do that. It's like he's kind of like, I want to act this way. I don't owe anybody anything. And then when people frown upon his behavior, then he's like, what the heck is going on here? So from that perspective, I don't agree with what he's saying. One thing that Murray kind of alluded to, he was maybe tiptoeing around it, because remember, Murray knows Kyrgios really well, better than any of us ever will, right? Maybe he has some sort of mental illness. This has become a very hot topic now in the last 5 years with depression and, a lot of athletes coming out, I'm not going to name any names, but it's one of those things, Parsa, where that has to be on the table, because this guy's behavior is not normal. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a level of tanking. Like, you look at a guy like Bernard Tomic. You know what I mean? Like, the way he tanks, I think, is different than Kyrgios. You know what I mean? We've seen guys like a Marcelo Rios. I think that's a very good parallel that you can draw between the two. I think Rios, man, how talented was he, right? Completely, in my opinion, underachieved compared to what he had. I mean, he played Agassi a few times. He made him look stupid out there. Like, he was just toying with him. You know what I mean? He made the Australian Open final. He lost to Korda. I remember that year, 2-2-2, but he made that final, no problem. He's won a bunch of Masters 1000s. The difference with him is he didn't speak English that well, and he wasn't really in the limelight. I mean, Kyrgios obviously is an English-speaking country. He has a little bit more of that flair, and now we're in a modern day with Instagram and Twitter, and he's all over those forums and platforms. Rios, that was nowhere to be seen back then. But who knows? I mean, this guy might legitimately have some mental issues. I don't know if he does. I'm not accusing him of anything, or I'm not a doctor. I can't, say anything like that. But there could definitely be some of those issues present, that if those are there, how can we really blame him for anything that he's doing, right? Because it might not be in his hands. I'm not trying to give him a scapegoat for anything, but I'm saying that at the end of the day, who knows what's going on out there? Because, people are going to look at it like, oh, he's just going, through the entitlement route, and he's a spoiled, prima donna millionaire, athlete, and he thinks he can do whatever he wants and get away with it. Could definitely be the case. Or there could definitely be something wrong with him. Because he doesn't, to me, look like he's that happy of a person. You know what I mean? And when you look at him, he doesn't smile that often and stuff like that. So those are some warning signs for me. And this guy's got everything. He's a good-looking guy. He's a tall guy. He's a multimillionaire. You know, like, he's traveling the world. There's nothing he's, if you look at it from a normal mindset, that he should be upset about. But he definitely is. He looks like he's really happy when he's with his girlfriend. Talks about her a lot on all of the forums. But, I mean, you know, time will tell. I mean, I think within this next year, we'll get a really good read on Kyrgios and his mindset and what he's really looking for in the game. But, I mean, look, how well did he play in Tokyo? He kept his head on straight completely throughout that event. There was no antics. He put his head down. He rolled the field. He won a 500 event, which was incredible. And you know, Goffin really was trying to win that match, and he couldn't. And then he comes in here, and he loses to Misha Zverev, which realistically he should have rolled him. And then he would have had Granollers after that. You got to think that he would have won that match. And then to play Djokovic in this current form. So we could have had a scenario where he could have been in the finals against his good buddy Murray today. There's no doubt about it, because Djokovic had a really easy draw to play Batista Agut. You know what I'm saying? So it was like there was not that much in his way of making this final as well. But, I mean, that's all, you know, could-haves and should-haves, right? So I think, you know, to close my thoughts on it, I think there's still a lot on the table on this story. It's a nice one to watch, and I just hope it turns out positively for Kyrgios, because I think he could be fantastic for the game, super talented guy, and, you know, still, I would say overall, you know, I like what I'm seeing. So, you know, do you have any closing thoughts on that, Porso?
No, I mean, I want to keep watching him play, I like watching him play. That was one of the matches I remember from this year's U.S. Open that we sat together. And, I want him to be who he is. And you know, in terms of mental illness and all that, I mean, I can't speculate. But
yes,
it's you know, definitely a talent and everything we've spoken about before, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, he is young. And I mean, you look at a guy even like Alex Zverev, right? He lost to Tsonga. He wanted to win that match, and he toasted a couple of his rackets. I mean, after that match was done, they were cleaning up the court from the debris of the graphite for a good, like, 5 minutes after that. Because he broke one racket after he lost the second set. And then when he broke his serve, excuse me, again, he took another one, and he just absolutely shattered it. So, I mean, he's a kid too, right? So he's gonna act in that fashion. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, Zverev is back in action this week. I believe he's playing in Stockholm. So we'll see how he rebounds. Parsa, close off here. Want to talk a little bit about the WTA, as we're a week off now from the WTA finals in Singapore. So we'll be back next week to preview that event. The top eight are almost determined. Sibulkova won today in Linz. So she's in the top. She's made the seventh spot. I believe that there's one more spot left this week. There's a tournament, last tournament of the year in Luxembourg. So I think that Kvitova's got a chance of making it. It's going to be interesting for me, Parsa, to see if Serena actually shows up. She hasn't said that she isn't. It would be a real shame. I mean, from what I'm seeing, you know, she's on stage with Beyonce. She's doing fashion shows. She's all over the place. I haven't seen anything about her being on a tennis court. Now, granted, she doesn't need to publicize that, right? She could very well be practicing 3-4 hours a day. I have no idea. But there hasn't been anything that has shown me that she's doing that. So that's why I'm commenting. I definitely hope that she plays. Because, you know, Kerber's in a little bit of a funk now herself. She's lost a couple matches in the last few weeks. I want to give a shout out to Wozniacki. Won another tournament today. A couple after the US Open now. So great on her to finish off her season. She'll be in Luxembourg as well as the second seed after Kvitova. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, any thoughts on Serena and, you know, her mindset? Do you think, you know, she's committed to finishing this year on a high, or do you think her sights are set on Australia next year and trying to get that 22nd major?
Yeah, I think she's done for the season.
Yeah. So you don't think she's going to play Singapore?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
She's in the New York area. I know that. And yeah. I probably would have heard if she's out here training.
Yeah, she's not even playing, right? Like, it's not.
Yeah, but I don't think you can't really train here. You know, she's I mean, you can, but it's definitely going to be a challenge. And you know, I think I would have heard about it. But
And what? Sorry, Parcel. Are there any fines for this on the WTA? I mean, we see them on the men's side. Like, if you don't play a Masters 1000, like, is, I mean, obviously she's going to say she's injured, probably, right? So she's going to say she's got a shoulder issue, and then that'll be that. But I've never really heard of, you know, like in the Masters 1000s, players get fined. That's why they even show up when they don't have to. Sorry, if they don't want to, pardon me. And I'm not going to name any names, but from inside information, I know that happens quite a bit, especially throughout the summer season with the Olympics. But in a situation on the WTA, I know there's the mandatory events. There's none bigger for them than the, you know, the final eight in Singapore. So I would think that she definitely has to show up for that. I mean, she's a marquee player. I really don't know.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I think the way it is it's just, you know, I just don't think it's the same way, Nima. You know,
yeah.
And something that I can't speculate on, but I can say that you know, players are going to do what players are going to do. This is the way the sport is. It's an individual sport, and as Kyrgios is going to do whatever he wants, Serena's going to do what's best for her and whatever she wants, and. You try to make more great players, you know, you try to have more great players so that when one's missing, it's not that big of a deal. Kind of like what's going on at the top of the men's game is still pretty exciting. You know that a Grand Slam queues up and, you got Wawrinka floating around and Del Potro floating around. And it's awesome, you know, because it still makes it very entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much it. And not much more info on that.
Yes, for sure. Okay, very good. So, Parsa, that will be it for this week. Everybody out there, Parsa and I will be back next weekend to preview the WTA finals from Singapore. In the meantime, make sure to check out the events this week, as I mentioned, in Moscow, Stockholm, Antwerp, and Luxembourg. In the meantime, you can check out Parsa Sammy at Parsa Sammy on Twitter, myself at Tennis Connected. You can also follow Tennis Connected on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. And finally, you can download this podcast on iTunes as well. To wrap up, this podcast, as I mentioned, was brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up if you're looking to get down to the ATP World Tour Finals in London, as well as the Australian Open. Thank you for joining us. Thanks, everybody else, for listening. Be good. Enjoy the week of tennis as we